Hey Retrospectors, for our third birthday, we've filmed an hour-long Q&A answering your questions.
We discuss our favourite facts, how we make the show, and what we've learned along the way.
If you're already supporting us on Patreon, thank you. You can watch it right now at patreon.com/retrospectors.
And if you're not a Patreon member, sign up. You don't have to pay a thing to become a free member and watch it now.
So check it out. It's free. patreon.com/retrospectors.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
It's May 8th, 1886, and another remarkable event is about to be uncovered by Arian, Rebecca, and Ali, the Retrospectors.
So I'm the wrong retrospector to introduce a story about the invention of Coca-Cola, because to be honest, I've always thought it was completely vile. But I have to admit, I might have reconsidered my verdict if I had been in Jacob's Pharmacy in Atlanta, Georgia, today in history in 1886, when Coca-Cola went on sale for the first time ever, because this beverage offered consumers a potent double punch of cocaine and caffeine with the added benefit of curing everything from headaches to hysteria.
Yeah, the story of Coca-Cola begins with John Stith Pemberton, a pharmacist in Atlanta, Georgia, who created a syrup in his laboratory that he intended initially as a patent medicine. And the syrup contained a combination of coca leaf, the cocaine bit, and kola nut extract, along with a bunch of other ingredients like sugar and water. And according to legend, one day while working on his concoction, Pemberton's assistant accidentally added carbonated water to the syrup instead of regular water. And this accidental mistake resulted in the creation of a fizzy and effervescent beverage and transformed what was meant to be a medicinal tonic into this nice-tasting soda, or horrible-tasting in the case of Rebecca. And it was introduced on this day to the public for the first time at Jacob's Pharmacy in Atlanta, as you say.
Yeah, well, that's a nice story, but it does ignore the fact that there was a temperance movement in Atlanta in 1885. The state was now completely dry. So it was necessary that he had to reformulate this, because the other ingredient that was in his original drink, which, by the way, was called Pemberton's French Wine Coca, was wine.
He sounded like he was really onto something with that. Cocaine and wine? Yes, please.
So he actually had a really successful product for the first time in his life with Pemberton's French Wine Coca. He advertised it as an antidepressant, a painkiller, and an all-round aphrodisiac. But then there was this, you know, new pivot in the law where he wasn't able to sell it anymore. And so the product had to be repositioned. That's what's happening on this day. He is turning it into a soft drink, marketed in soda fountains, and given a new name, Coca-Cola.
Yeah, there's this whole, it had cocaine in it, as a bit of a joke, like, look at these dumb Victorians. But Pemberton very much intended the drink to act as a stimulant and a painkiller, so it could act as an alternative to more nefarious substances. And he had a personal stake in this. He was a veteran of the US Civil War, on the wrong side, and he had struggled with morphine dependency in the aftermath of the war. He had started experimenting with medicinal drinks at his home in Columbus, Georgia, and if his first recipe had caught on, we'd all be chugging a nice cold Dr. Tuggles compound syrup of globe flower. He then got interested in coca wine. At the time, you could buy this thing called Vin Mariani, which was a potent combination of Bordeaux wine and cocaine. He developed, as you said, his own, adding the cola nut, a source of caffeine, as if the original recipe wasn't hair-raising enough. And then, yes, ended up removing the wine and naming his new alcohol-free formula after its principal ingredients, Coca-Cola. The name was suggested by his business partner and bookkeeper, Frank Mason Robinson. And actually, the logo of Coca-Cola, the script is based on Robinson's writing and employs the Spencerian script, which was used by bookkeepers during this era. So that's a little tribute to him for coming up with the name. But my question getting into this was, why were soft drinks being sold at pharmacies? And if you think about it, you do see it in popular culture as well. If you think about It's a Wonderful Life, you know, they're all sitting around eating an ice cream sherbet in Mr. Gower's drugstore. You're like, why are they doing that? Mm. Well, this all comes from the fact that in the 19th century, soda water began to be seen as having medicinal benefits. And to boost sales of this otherwise very bland health beverage, pharmacists started adding flavoured syrups to the carbonated water. And that's why Pemberton brought to Joseph Jacobs Pharmacy on this day a syrup for diluting. It wasn't a pre-made soft drink.
Yeah, I mean, Pemberton must have been feeling like it was a shame that he'd had to pivot to soft drinks in the first place, given that he must have known that he was onto a winner when he was emulating that Vin Mariani. That drink was huge with, among others, Jules Verne, Arthur Conan Doyle, and the chief rabbi of France was quoted to have said, "Praise be to Mariani's wine." Pope Leo XIII reportedly carried a flask of it regularly and gave the Parisian chemist Angelo Mariani, who created it, a medal. So, you know, it was already a thing that was a winner before Pemberton got there.
Strong influences to have on board, aren't they?
Yeah, so to have to, right.
The Queen Victoria as well.
Everyone loved it. Right. Yeah. I mean, who wouldn't? So it must have been really frustrating to have to give up that product when this new temperance legislation in Atlanta and Fulton County came in.
Yes, but inadvertently, it did mean that he'd stumbled upon what would make Coca-Cola not just successful, but really truly profitable, as it has gone on to be for over a century since, which was by cutting out the wine, you no longer have an expensive ingredient in there. I mean, okay, yes, they had to import the cola nut. But I mean, once you're basically making a syrup that you add carbonated water to, all of the money that's coming in can go on marketing to increase your customer base rather than in creating the thing in the first place. And really, that's been the Coca-Cola model ever since.
I mean, just cut out the sugar in the syrup and sell the cocaine. That must have been the most logical move.
Yeah, so despite his outlandish Victorian era claims, you could do this back in the day, that Coca-Cola cured not only morphine addiction, but also headaches, impotence, hysteria, anything under the sun. It didn't catch on all at once. According to Coca-Cola's official corporate history, in the first year, Pemberton sold 95 litres of syrup, which works out to an average of 9 glasses sold per day. That's compared to 1.9 billion today. But the second year, he sold almost 4,000 litres. You know, an enormous spike in sales. Coca-Cola was getting a fan base. You know, no wonder customers loved it. It was laced with cocaine and caffeine. Cocaine would be removed from the recipe ahead of the introduction of the Pure Food and Drug Act in 1906, which kind of put an end to that 19th century, let's just sprinkle Class A drugs on things.
We keep dropping this in as if it's got like a line of coke in it. It hasn't. It's very subtly flavoured with an extract from the leaf, right?
I mean, yes. Yeah, but drink enough of it.
It's got as much cocaine in it as it has caffeine in it now. So that, you know, the little buzz that you get of caffeine from a Coke, it's still safe. It wasn't, off their tits on Coke.
The problem is we don't have a drink to compare it to today. You know, no. You're saying, well, there's only as much cocaine in it as there is caffeine, but we don't have a cocaine-laced drink to compare it with. No. I mean, it was probably a little more of a little thrill than anything else. But
it would have been like having a Red Bull. That is kind of comparative, isn't it? Like, it's that. It's a mix of stimulants.
Yeah.
It was safe to drink, just not to have 10 of them.
Yeah, so the people who did drink it loved it. The problem was there was a bit of a limit on how popular it could get, because soda fountain drinks were dispersed out of the tap into a glass in the pharmacy and you drank it there. So there was a kind of a natural ceiling on how much you could really sell that way before the advent of widespread marketed bottled drinks. This was before fizzy drinks were an everyday drink. Pretty much since the colonial era, most Americans drank water, milk, tea, coffee, or alcohol. There weren't shops full of aisles with different fizzy drinks, and there wasn't even yet the concept of buying carbonated beverages for children either. There just wasn't the market for it.
And you couldn't have the consistency of making the product widely available across the states because bottling plants didn't exist to make it, you know, in the same way everywhere. It was easier to do the syrup.
And partly it was a lack of vision. You know, shortly after Coca-Cola entered the market, Pemberton himself fell ill and immediately faced financial ruin. And in desperation, he began selling the rights to his formula to business partners in Atlanta. And part of the motivation stemmed from his ongoing and costly morphine addiction. But despite this, Pemberton did have this idea that someday someone will make this into a national drink. He just didn't have the imagination to be able to work out how to do it. And so he tried to secure ownership shares for his son, but his son opted for immediate financial gain. And consequently, in 1888, Pemberton and his son sold the remaining patent to Atlanta pharmacist Asa Griggs Candler for $300, the equivalent of $9,000 today. So practically nothing versus what we know this company became.
Yeah, and one reason for its unprecedented ubiquity was the low cost. A Coke cost you 5 cents from this day in 1886, and even then 5 cents was fairly cheap, until 1959. They were able to keep the price fixed for that long because of consistent improvements in manufacturing, bottling, distributing, you know, as the carbonated drinks market exploded, which offset cost of living increases over that time. But another reason it became ubiquitous lies in a pretty dumb deal that Asa Griggs Candler made in 1899 when he sold off the bottling rights to two Tennessee businessmen for $1. He did not see a future in bottled Coke. And that contract stipulated a set price for the syrup, and that went on until 1921. So they had a ceiling on how much money they could make from selling Coke syrup to the bottling plant. The only way to make more money was to sell more Coke. That's why they concentrated so much on aggressive advertising, because they knew they couldn't raise the price of the syrup. Mm. The factor which dissuaded them from raising the price in the 1940s was the increasing prevalence of another distribution model, vending machines. Until the 1950s, most vending machines couldn't give change. So the thinking was that if you required more than one coin, it would put customers off. They'd pick another drink instead. So they had to keep the price at a nickel or double it to a dime. And they were like, well, people aren't going to want us to double the price of the drink. Or think outside the box, like the president of Coca-Cola in the 1950s, Robert Woodruff, who approached the US Treasury Department to ask whether it might create a 7.5 cent coin. They declined.
The best Coke is apparently at McDonald's.
But that's like when people say you have to go to Ireland to have the best Guinness. What's best about the Coke at McDonald's?
Well, this is the thing. Coca-Cola actually ships its syrup to McDonald's locations in stainless steel containers, which is a departure from the conventional plastic bags used by other suppliers. Ugh. And the result is touted to be the most delicious and precious Coke you can get. Yeah, okay. So because it's come in this like alternative, purer packaging.
All right, fine. I give it one more chance, guys. Let's go to McDonald's.
Yeah. We can afford that as a rap party. Let's do it.
Tomorrow.
I always imagined this as a caper, you know? I always imagined it as him breaking in the middle of the night. But it was more of a catfish. Right.
Ditch the ads and get a Sunday episode when you join Club Retrospectors. Patreon.com/retrospectors.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, I'm Guy Raz, and on my show, Wisdom from the Top, I talk with CEOs and business leaders about the toughest challenges of their careers.
There's lots of ways to measure success.
Sometimes a company has to bet against itself.
We wanted to set ourselves apart by having a point of view.
Businesses really impact people's lives in pretty fundamental ways.
On Wisdom from the Top, some of the greatest business leaders of our time share their intimate stories of leadership, innovation, and transformation. Stories you won't hear anywhere else. Check out Wisdom from the Top only on Luminary. Now, back to your show.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.